feel like we've been here before.
We've done this, haven't we? All right, so welcome to Talking Shop Down Under. This is your host, Richard Banks, and live at TechEd on the final day, Friday morning.
Early Friday morning.
8 o'clock in the morning. We are so keen to talk to you guys about stuff. So I have with me for this particular episode, Mr. Andrew Coates.
Morning.
Coatesy, how are you doing?
Good. Lovely to be here.
It is lovely to have you here. Frankly, had to be done.
It does. Well, it will have to be done one day.
All right. So, speaking frankly of all things, Coatesy.
Shop down under. Oh.
Do you want to, just for those who haven't come across you, because, you know, this does go to an international audience.
Absolutely.
Explain who you are, how you fit in this particular world and what you're doing.
Okay. So I'm a developer evangelist at Microsoft. I guess I have been for about 7.5 years. I concentrate on the client side of the .NET bits. So often that's the Office side, the WPF side, the WinForms side, more recently some cool stuff around forms over data, which we'll talk about in a minute, and a bunch of Azure things. Because kind of Azure is the other side of the client side.
So the WPF stuff, there's not much happening there at the moment.
I know you're going to try and bait me the whole day, but I'm going to resist as much as possible.
So I heard this. No, okay. So maybe you can talk Windows 8. No.
I have three words for you.
Go to Anaheim.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so what we were going to talk about was a small product called
Visual Studio Light Switch.
Light Switch. No, yeah. So at this point, the audience just switched off.
Yeah.
So we like a light switch.
Yeah.
So
how do we switch them back on again?
Yeah, how do we switch them back on before they do tune out?
It's interesting. I've been developing small and medium apps for a long, long time. Well before I was at Microsoft, I was it's only a small audience, isn't it? I'm a Fox Pro guy way back.
Yeah. Don't admit it. Don't admit it.
Well, that's cool. The interesting thing about Fox was that it was really easy to very quickly create an application that was, you know, very, very performant at you know, reasonable numbers of users, talk to data very, 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 in a very, simple way.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea about LightSwitch is that we've kind of brought this really simple way to create business applications and put them either on the desktop or on the cloud for people who are not professional developers, for what we're calling end user developers. And the end user developer is an interesting category. It's kind of, it's not your end user as such, not your dweeb, but just,
obviously,
for want of a better word, who only, sort of switches the computer on to surf, Facebook, say, or listen to podcasts. But it's the person who, you know, might be a marketer or an engineer or a financier or whatever, who doesn't work in IT, but who needs to get this stuff done. They need to be able to quickly collect data and report on it. They need to be able to, have an application, up and running quickly that probably isn't, going to be one that's run by corporate IT, but maybe they do need to access some of the data that corporate IT make available. Maybe they do need to be able to put their database somewhere in a data center.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they do need to be able to say, well, I'm happy that if this becomes really important, the IT guys can take it over. And I guess LightSwitch promises all those things.
So when we say the IT guys take it over, we're talking about the IT pros, not so much the developers?
No, the developers, absolutely. So the IT guys being the professional IT people. People who work in the developer department, or they probably work for, the corporate IT department. And whether they're the IT administrators,
yep.
The DBAs, or the guys who are doing deployment, or whether they're the developers, they're all pretty keen to know about LightSwitch, because LightSwitch, the promise of LightSwitch is that it's a proper Visual Studio, when you create a LightSwitch app, it's a proper Visual Studio solution that can be brought into Visual Studio by a professional developer and enhanced and deployed.
So LightSwitch itself is a Visual Studio shell, isn't
it? Yep, correct. So if you just get the LightSwitch SKU, then you get the Visual Studio shell, and the LightSwitch templates, and the ability to, you know, write code and all those sorts of things up to where LightSwitch does. You can't add a new project type.
Okay, so it's kind of like the Visual Studio Express or Game Studio kind of.
Well, it
in terms of the limitations around.
No, the limitations are different. There are limitations, but they're different limitations. So, for example, it does integrate directly with TFS.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can all of the artifacts that come out of LightSwitch are first class citizens in the TFS source control world, and all the other TFS bits. It does allow you to have add-ins and extensions.
Okay, yeah. So you can hit extension manager and everything.
Extension manager works, and there's a whole thriving ecosystem of LightSwitch add-ins at the moment that's started up from almost nothing in the last month or so. That's really exciting. And I guess it's designed not for the hobbyist so much as the person who just wants to use Visual Studio as a tool. And the neat thing is that we take care of a whole bunch of the mundane stuff for you. And this is the other thing that's going to excite developers, professional developers, is the mundane is kind of taken care of and you get to go on with the things that are actually interesting.
The mundane is the fun part of every project, right, where we sit there and argue around exactly the perfect pattern. And
what are we going to use for our data access layer? How are we going to persist?
I think we should use anything but Entity Framework. Solved.
Done. Right. So the other interesting question is then, is it tabs or spaces? You know?
Oh, well, no, we can sort that out with Visual Studio Extension, right? The one that does the switching between.
Which also works in LaTeX. Yeah, so.
it's really underscores or no underscores for private variables. Yeah, right. That's the one.
Do we Pascal case or Camel case? Yes, all right. I guess the other interesting thing is that LightSwitch provides a whole lot of opportunity for professional developers to add – I hesitate to use the word add value because it sounds so very Microsofty.
And very uninteresting.
Uninteresting. But it really does give you the opportunity to encapsulate your knowledge in a way that the end users can use straight away. So things like – one of the things that LightSwitch ships with is this concept of business types. And a business type is, if you like, an extension of a basic type. And a basic type might be some strings or decimal or whatever.
Yep.
So there's a bunch of business types that ship with LightSwitch out of the box. Email, phone, money, and those sorts of things. And the neat thing about that is that they come in with encapsulated inside them a whole bunch of validation, yep, a whole lot of additional controls that might be used to display them. Although they still persist in the base type at the back end, LightSwitch and its data model know enough about how to rehydrate and display those and capture them, which is very, very neat. And so the ones that ship out of the box are the very, very common ones, as I said, phone and email address and so on. And they validating an email address is a non-trivial task usually, but we ship that in LightSwitch. The end user developer doesn't need to know how to write that regex. That's been done. But you as a professional developer might know all the details about how purchase order the purchase order type is handled inside your business.
Because for some reason we've got a meaningful code instead of whatever else, and we have to have a certain breakdown.
Right, exactly. It might mean a whole bunch of things, or there might be something around capturing a customer address, which is really important to your business. That you know, you need to make sure that a particular zone is included, or something like that. Or you know, a whole lot of ISBN is another interesting thing. The book number, you know, there's a whole bunch of checksum validation that can go on in behind the scenes there that you can do, and that can be encapsulated. And so the end user developer can just say the type that I'm defining in this table is of ISBN. And all of the business logic is handled for you.
So the one of the things I noticed with the session you did yesterday was with the phone number, basically you go into the phone number field and you get a little drop down that's got four fields in there because you had an extension number and whatever else, but it didn't support an Australian phone number format out of the box, for instance.
Right.
Is that something that's easy to basically inherit from the existing phone data type and then make a change, or you've got to create an Australian phone number business entity?
So interestingly, that phone number field is a really good example of the power of the business types. We shipped, I think, 8 phone number formats out of the box, but
Australia's a second class citizen, as we know, because here.
I don't know, second might be overstating that. Anyway, the interesting thing was that something I showed in the first session, but not the second, is I could open in the properties dialog. Because this business type has been defined, you can extend the properties dialog at design time as part of the business type. And there's a hyperlink in there, a link label in there that allows you to pop up a dialog and put additional phone number formats in there.
Okay, so
gets stored in the XML file.
So if we were doing something with an address field, for instance, so one of those classic web situations where you've got an address, you pick a country, and then based on the country you choose, you decide whether you're having a zip code or a postcode, right, or whether there's, you know, different postcode, yep, formats, and you want to have all that in that logic.
Yep.
That changing of the display and everything else and properties and which countries are available, all completely customizable.
Yep, and you could configure that directly into a business type, no problem at all. And you could wrap that business type up in a V6 package and deploy it either to just your organization or to anyone in the world through the Visual Studio Extension Manager.
Okay, so this gives I suppose a lot of developers like building tools.
Mm-hmm.
We build applications, but a lot of us like.
But first, we've got to write the standard generalized graphics library.
You've got to have a framework, of course. And everything's got a framework. And we like building these little frameworks that kind of don't do much. But if we build the framework, then the application will magically turn up.
It'll appear.
Like Field of Dreams, right?
Yeah.
So, do you see that this is a great opportunity for people who like building frameworks to jump in, and that's one of the reasons why we should pay attention to it.
Let's go back one. I'm not sure about building frameworks. I think the framework is pretty well defined for Lightswitch.
Yeah.
The base framework stuff, they've made a lot of very sensible architectural decisions.
So we're kind of building Bling then?
Well, yeah, Bling, but useful Bling. Bling that's really going to make the thing work.
Usefuler.
Even more useful.
We have an opportunity for our partners.
Well, I would certainly say there's a huge opportunity, and some partners are already grasping it with both hands and running very quickly towards the shining trophy or whatever.
The big pot of gold.
It's interesting, actually. One of the local developers in Melbourne, a guy named Jan Duran. I don't know if you know Jan, but, yep, is, last I looked, well, in fact, not last I looked, second last I looked, was had the top ranking extensions for Lightswitch on Enterprise, on the Extension Manager. And so there's a whole bunch of, and there happen to be a couple of really nice themes that change the look and feel of your Lightswitch application at the flick of a button. But, there's plenty of opportunity for some really quite powerful and frankly, very useful extensions to Lightswitch.
So just talk through creating, the business entity extensions. What are some, like, it's not just a case of provide a couple of little Silverlight controls.
So yeah,
there's a bit more to it, isn't it?
Absolutely. So let's take ISBN as an example. So you wanted to create a business entity for ISBN. What you need to provide is, you need to provide some validation, because ISBN's got two types of checksum. They've got ISBN 10 and ISBN 13, and the ISBN 10 checksum is different from the ISBN 13 checksum, as you might expect. Some people don't want to include ISBN 13s in their thing, so you may want to provide a switch in the properties to say whether you're allowing 13s or not.
Okay.
Then you can do all sorts of interesting things around how you're going to capture that. Are you going to provide a field that allows you to input the first 9 numbers and calculates a checksum for you to check whether that's right, or whether you're going to put the whole thing in and then check whether that it's a valid ISBN? And then you might be able to do all sorts of interesting stuff, like taking that ISBN and going looking it up on a web service like the Amazon web service and picking up additional information and offering to bring it in automatically. Or even things like cover shots and those sorts of things could come down as part of that process. And then you might also provide a control that does things like just the display. So given an ISBN, display the book. And so you would bind that control.
The ISBN would be a property.
So the ISBN would be a property of the entity.
Yep.
But the display for that, you'd bind to the ISBN, but the display would be smart enough to go and find out all the additional details and display it on the screen.
And this is still part of the same business entity extension that we'd provide. So we're not providing like a read-only control and a
No. So you can package all those up in the one V6 file. And based on which screen you're on, you could have an ISBN. You could choose to use the ISBN display control or the ISBN input control. I guess the analogy is a label versus a text box. But, you know, there's the...
Obviously a little bit more complex.
Well,
maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. Conceptually, the same thing, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you also mentioned earlier reskinning the application and changing the way the look and feel is. So when you spin up Lightswitch, you get this, the kind of the ribbony area at the top, and there's things set in certain positions, and you've got a feel for how that page will display and so forth. But we can actually, if we want, jump in and hack that thing to pieces and make it as ugly as we possibly can because we lack designer skills.
Yeah. So it's certainly possible to make it very ugly. So there's a number of different places you can extend Lightswitch, and one of them is this concept of skins. And skins really let you change the entire default layout of a
Lightswitch
application.
So this is different to a Winamp skin, right?
slightly different from Winamp skin, yes. But the skins allow you to completely change the way forms are displayed, because the whole idea about Lightswitch is it's forms over data.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at the back end you define the data, and the front end you display forms for reading and writing of data. And by default, the forms are displayed in a very corporate kind of tabbed layout with a lovely list of the forms you can display on the left-hand side.
We've got our new form of Battleship Grey ready to go.
Exactly. That's cool. And I think we've tweaked the hex code, so we've made an F into a an E in one or two places, you know. Oh, nice. Just we toned it right down. But only in the least significant bite. We wouldn't want to change the most significant bite. I mean, it's just fine. And out of the box, Lightswitch does a really good job of being very functional. I wouldn't say it's beautiful out of the box. It's functional and it's effective. But what you can do is take that because it's just a model of MVVM architecture, you can say, for this model, we're going to display the views in this other way. And we're going to, one example where it looks like a deck of cards and you can choose which form you want out of the splayed out deck of cards that someone's holding.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's nice.
I think it's called Mune. But anyway, it's an extension you can grab right now as part of the, from the extension manager. And the cool thing is that lots of the people who are writing extensions, including Microsoft, are releasing their source code as well. So I showed one yesterday where we could change the look and feel to be very, very metro.
Yep.
I'm still not sure if that's the right term, but it is called the metro theme.
It's Cosmo now, isn't it?
It's Cosmo, that's right. So
I don't know why you changed the name, but
anyway. But the metro theme changes from what almost looked like what looked very sort of very, very, very mid 2000s. To something that was brought kicking and screaming into the 2010, 2011 time, you know, that sort of really flat look and all caps are all lowercase it's very, very monochromatic.
The fade in, fade out.
Fade in, fade out, monochromatic and that sort of no lines on a grid or like all that kind of thing. But again, there was as an end user developer, I didn't have to write any code to go and make that decision. I just decided to apply a different skin. In fact, that case, a different theme.
Yeah. So, even though it's targeted at end-user developers, do you see that pro developers are going to just cheat in some respects and say if they get asked to do a CRUD application, grab Lightswitch and just get bang and done in a day?
I hope so, because it takes away a whole bunch of the drudgery. And you can spend your time actually doing interesting things like writing that standard generalized graphics library.
XNA version 3.
That's right.
Well, no, beyond that, what are we up to 4 anyway? So anyway, regardless.
But there's a real potential there to get. I can see a burgeoning business for the traditional small and medium business consultant. Mm-hmm. The great thing about Lightswitch is it gives you access to all of the, if you're writing an out of browser app, it gives you access to all of the bits and pieces on the desktop anyway. So you can do all of your office interaction, you can interact with SharePoint, you can interact with all sorts of things directly out of the box. And it's a very, very powerful tool for that. So I can see pro developers using it in a couple of places. So obviously the first is the extension stuff that we've already talked about. Yep. Second is this thing that where you have a quick and dirty application. Well, dirty is the wrong word, but a quick and standard application that needs to be produced. And I guess the third one is that there's a whole lot of stuff that we do things like table maintenance and those sorts of things, which generally get sort of, we end up in Enterprise Manager in SQL where we do the, edit top 200 rows and that's how we look after stuff.
Yeah, but if we're allowed to, because generally the DBA will stomp on us if we do that.
But what we can do now is very quickly, over our maintenance tables, put a Lightswitch app and do maintenance that way. Which is really
interesting. Okay, we want to cheat and just hack the data in the database.
But it gives us an opportunity.
But making it available in the app itself.
Yeah, exactly. Either in the app itself or is that admin app that someone can fire up.
Yep.
Glenn Wilson, who's one of the, who's actually an XNA MVP in Melbourne, has been doing some really interesting stuff, reporting on his SQL Server capacity against MSDB in a bunch of places with a Lightswitch app.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's just run a Lightswitch app up to do database monitoring, basically. Against MSDB, which is a really interesting idea. Interesting. And a few other people doing some fascinating things.
So there's no reporting in Lightswitch. It's
right.
Out of the box. Right?
Correct. Out of the box, there's no reporting. There's no reporting designer. No report designer. There's a couple of things you can do. One is that if you're only reporting against SQL, then SQL Reporting Services does a pretty good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the real advantages of Lightswitch is this concept of data federation and its ability to take data from a number of different sources and put it into its data workspace. It's in memory graph. And so you need some way of reporting against that. Because SQL Reporting Services has got no clue that you're talking to some RIA, WCF RIA service or SharePoint somewhere as well as SQL. So, there's a couple of options. One is there's quite a nice add-in that allows you to put stuff out to Word, and push stuff out as reports into Word. And then, one of the component vendors, and I can't remember whether it's Infogistics or Component One, have got a really nice reporting interface as well, which allow you to just, basically it's a reporting designer. against against Lightswitch. So,
jumping back a little bit, you mentioned it's MVVM in terms of how it's implemented in, mm-hmm. in you know, what gets generated and so forth. How does that relate to a testing story at all?
Yeah, look, ever since you asked me this question yesterday, just after the session, I've been kind of thinking about it. The MVVM architecture is certainly there, and I haven't seen anyone directly use the view models to do testing.
Yep.
It's not to say it hasn't happened. I just haven't seen that happen yet. I'm guessing that internally, I'm sure that people have been thinking about how that's going to work, and there's probably testing going on internally already, but I haven't seen anything external.
Okay, so let's say that those view models are very tightly coupled to the rest of the Lightswitch, and it's a pain in the butt to get in there because of X, Y, and Z. It's kind of like SharePoint, where it's so statically typed, it's a nightmare. Are there other approaches we could take to basically take that logic that someone's written and move it into a testable form?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things you can do is pull the logic out and put it in a satellite assembly. And you can do that if you use the Visual Studio Professional to open the Lightswitch application. But that's really simple to do, and then your assembly can be in whatever language you like, can implement whatever models you like, and you can just set a reference to that assembly in the Lightswitch projects, and away you go, and you call straight into
it. Okay, so it's a bit like the VSTO situation where you don't put any genuine logic in the VSTO. You put it in a satellite assembly, test that.
Certainly, you could take that approach if you wanted to. I'm expecting that most end-user developers won't have that approach. But if you want to bring the results of their labors in-house, then you could probably refactor into something like that.
When one of these – so with Access, we had this issue, right, where someone would write a little application that was tracking goods inward and stock on hand for something silly that they got fed up with waiting for IT to do something.
Right.
So they went, screw this, doing my own thing. And then it became really important, and we've now got this data island, and everyone's copying their Access databases around, and yeesh.
I can see. You've changed colour.
I've been burnt. Yeah. So now we say, look, do what you want, no problem. IT's really slow. Go grab Lightswitch, that's fine. Bang out your application. But they'll have written some horrible logic at some point somewhere, and then we want to take that inboard into our IT dev team. We look at the code and we go, this is horrible code, because they're not professional developers. They've written some mess.
Right.
So now we go, well, we want to be able to test some of this logic, prove it works, and deal with their edge cases and where they're having problems and everything else. That's more the situation I'm thinking of. How do we migrate it into a better situation?
Right. So the first thing is, you can just bring the solution in and open it in Visual Studio Professional and above. Okay, so that's easy. I mean, then you're right. You can certainly refactor out into another assembly, and that would be quite just refactoring some of the method code out just by itself would work quite well, you know. And you could do that progressively. I don't see that'd be a problem at all.
Okay. All right. So what are some of the other things we haven't necessarily talked about in Lightswitch that are worth paying attention to? I know it's early in the morning.
It is early in the morning. Going. Got to remember what we've talked about now. Well, what stood out for you when you saw the session yesterday?
So I was looking at things and going, yeah, I can see where it's coming from. I can see the business pitch for it and everything else. I'm thinking, well, how is this different to Access in some respects? Because that's the obvious comparison.
Right. So it's .NET code and it's a nice architecture, and it uses enterprise data at the back end. I think it's one of they're the big things for me that are different. It has a path. It has a progression path.
So what we saw yesterday was that it's not just enterprise data, because enterprise data sounds a bit times, you know, it's jargon laden and everything else. But, you know, and then you show SharePoint and immediately I just shut down. But you also talked about REST data and things like that.
Any WCF RIA service, for example, is available as a first class data type in data source in Lightswitch, and when you say add data, it'll just be displayed as an entity like any other entity.
So let's say I've got an MVC application I've written somewhere else that's got a few REST endpoints exposing JSON data.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to consume that with Lightswitch
if you've wrapped it in WCF data, WCF RIA service.
Okay, but if I haven't,
then you'll need to wrap it in a WCF RIA service.
There's no other way, or again, it's in a satellite assembly, and I make.
You certainly could in a satellite assembly, and but
so
but,
I suppose the question is that data access part extensible the same way the other parts of Lightswitch are?
At the moment, my understanding is that those four distinct data types are the data sources are the ones we've got. So what we call local data, which is actually SQL Server at the back end in a it creates an MDF file that attaches to your local SQL Express.
SQL Express, yeah.
Yeah. SQL Server itself, or actually anything entity framework that we can talk to through the standard providers.
Yep.
Yep. SharePoint lists, mm-hmm. and then the WCF RIA service. Yeah, and my understanding is that you do need to do some work to wrap any other type of service in a WCF RIA.
And basically,
service.
So you'd create some RIA services that then just make a call out. So we'd double
Correct.
Hop
yep.
in some respects.
Yep, that's right. And there's some interesting stuff on the MSDN website already about how that's going to work.
Okay.
Yeah, how that does work.
So this might be a version 2 thing where they extend some of the data access.
I think. Jay Schmelz has already said that they're looking, pretty strongly at all sorts of different options around data access.
Yeah, because obviously if you're in an enterprise, you've got Java systems and all sorts of other things going on. You need to be able to access some of that at
right.
time.
Right, and so this is what some of the places that the IT department's really going to shine is providing wrappers around all sorts of data sources that make it really easy for end user developers to get at the data.
Okay, so from a strategic point of view. Microsoft seems to have been pushing more the democratization of development recently. We've had WebMatrix come out, yep. and that's trying to hit that PHP developer market in some respects, or the yep. people who don't know how to do a lot of web stuff but can bang out something simple.
Right.
This is another part of that.
I think what we found, though, is that lots of people are doing development already who aren't what we call professional developers, and we yep. give them the tools that make it easy for them to produce applications that are, for want of a better term, best practice. If you don't give them the tools to do that, then they're going to produce applications that are not. And we're going to continue to have the problems we've had around, that transition between a dodgy application that needs to come in house and the IT department.
Yeah, we're basically stuck with, we have to rewrite this thing
exactly.
because it's so
from
hopeless.
Scratch. Yeah, yeah.
And that's, not a.
No one likes that. No one's happy. No one wins.
it's an us and them thing at that point.
Well, exactly. And this has got potential to really smooth that us and them barrier. Because the end user developers see that they're being provided with a tool that makes their job really easy.
Yep.
And the professional developer sees that they're not going to be left with some legacy of a mess that has to be cleaned up.
So in the same way we can take a WebMatrix app and upscale it effectively or professionalize. Is that going to be the new word? We can do the same thing with a Lightswitch app as well.
Right. And in fact, the interesting thing about the Lightswitch app is it doesn't, and WebMatrix probably like this as well, but it doesn't have to just go in one direction. The professional IT guys could take it in house and enhance an app and then push it back out for maintenance by the end user developer if they wanted to. Yeah, they could add something, add some capabilities. They could go and do some of the nice customization bits.
I can't really see that one happening because, once our professional nerds get our hands on things, we don't want to let anyone else dirty up our sandpit.
We want to dirty it ourselves.
Yeah,
I've sold it and no one else is going to touch it.
All right. So a slightly different question. Does this, in some respects, also start to compete with those 4GLs that used to float around a while ago? You could do that forms over data thing in this, things like Magic and, and other
stuff.
Yeah,
I guess the interesting thing is that the edges are starting to get blurred around all these definitions, right? This is a professional developed tool. It's an end user developer tool. It's a 4GL. It's a model driven tool. All that kind of stuff. It doesn't necessarily make sense to delineate so starkly anymore. So yes, I think it impinges on that. It definitely, who said it? I think it might have been a video of Jay Schmelz's I was watching, and he said the thing you need to do when you're filling a gap between two things is that you actually need to overlap on either side, because otherwise you're just left with two gaps. and so that nice. The ability to blur is really important. I think the ability to sort of overlap a little bit into the end user space and overlap a bit into the professional space means that you've got an opportunity for the gap to be bridged properly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So any last words before we wrap up then?
Lightswitch is the simplest way to develop.
Okay, any Anything any non-marketing ways.
I'm really excited about this. And the reason I'm excited about it is because, this is sort of the full circle from almost where I started at Microsoft. I came to Microsoft from a world where I was doing rapid application development in a development environment that was very, very close to the data. And I moved directly into the alphabet soup that was data access in .NET. Yeah, especially at that stage where there was all sorts of weirdness going on, and every week a new acronym would come out that you had to, which was the new way.
All the ADO things.
All of that. Everything.
Yeah.
So we've gone from there, and I think we've almost come full circle where, at least in the space that was interesting to me then, that we've now got a tool that's going to, I'm happy to be able to say, yes, this is going to be able to let people create stuff quickly and easily.
So there is one other thing that's just jumped to mind that I should ask. With the lingering doubts at the moment over the future of Silverlight and the fact that this is an MVVM application at its heart, do we see that there's going to be a web front end at all, or a WPF front end, even talking something slightly different?
We've made no announcements about what's going to happen next. And I guess that, like everyone, we'll look and see what happens at Build, and then the guys are busily planning whether there is going to be, we've made no announcements about whether there's going to be another version even, or what's going to be in it if there is. But yeah, watch this space.
Watch this space. Excellent. All right, Casey, thanks for that.
Thanks, Rich. Lots of fun.
And thank you everyone for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode. And until then, happy coding. See you guys later.
Visit talkingshopdownunder.com for previous shows or to subscribe to the feed. Your feedback is always very much appreciated, so get in touch and let us know what you're thinking. Reviews can be left on iTunes or the Zoom Marketplace. Email can be sent to mail@talkingshopdownunder.com and tweets to @talking_shop. That's it for now. Show's over.
Go home, people. Go home.